The following episode of Lyrics of Their Life podcast deals with serious and sensitive topics. Listener discretion is advised. Hi everyone, and welcome to yet another very special episode of Lyrics of Their Life podcast. In this episode, I sit down with an old friend and current rising country music artist, Billy Gudgeon. After growing up together in the small country town of Gulgong in New South Wales, it was great to finally catch up with him once again and share some great laughs. Billy's not only a talented musician, but also a genuinely good bloke. He's humble, funny, and full of confidence, both on and off the stage. As we reflect on the good old times, his musical influences, how he discovered his passion for music, the craziest thing that he ever saw while up on stage, which artist he'd like to bring back from the dead, and the meaning behind his songs, like Back to Country and Kiss My Glass. Billy also shares what he has in store for us next, and where you can catch him live. All that, and much more, in this special episode. So without further ado, let's get straight into it. I'm your host, Adam Hampton, and this is Lyrics of Their Life.
Prince has died at the age of 57.
This is it.
Sorry, Gary, but I was always the talented member of the band.
Keep booing, little girl. I will hit a man with glasses.
I'm really happy for you. I'm gonna let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
Former Beatle John Lennon, who was 40, was shot and killed last night outside his luxury apartment in New York.
Has-beens shouldn't present fucking awards to gonna be.
Hello and welcome everyone to Lyrics of Their Life podcast. Today I've got the pleasure of chatting with an old friend and an incredibly talented up-and-coming country music artist, Billy Gudgeon. Billy, mate, welcome to the show. I've been really looking forward to having you on the show. How have you been and how you been keeping busy?
I've been good, brother. Man, how have I been keeping busy? I don't know if we've got quite enough time in a podcast on how I've been keeping busy. Mate, I've been recording, I've been touring, I've been gigging, and then I've been trying to run other businesses and just trying to be like a duck swimming on a pond, looking cool on the top and paddling like hell on the bottom. So,
So for those that might not know much about your music or you, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and the type of music that you play?
Sure, man. I am a... How do I describe it? I guess I'm a country rock. Heartland rock has been a little bit, it's been a term that's been thrown around a little bit. I don't really know what that means. I guess it's just that loud and proud country rock. As far as a songwriter goes, I'm very much trying to write based around my own life and my own personal experiences. But look, as far as live shows goes, it's just debauchery. It's just that loud and proud, wild country rock show, mixing with some stuff that'll make you feel something. So I guess that's probably the best way I can kind of describe myself. I don't know. It's very hard to describe yourself without sort of watching yourself. I think other people are probably better off describing me than I can describe myself. So.
Yeah. So you grew up in the small country town of Gulgong in New South Wales. Could you describe for our listeners what it was like growing up in this area? And what are your fondest memories from your time there?
Yeah, man. Gulgong's it will forever have a place in my heart. It's it is a small town, and everyone knows everyone, and it's you know, one of those little communities. I went to school with you. I finished up primary school in Gulgong. It would have been year 3, and then I went over to school in Mudgee. And that was simply because my mum didn't get along with my teacher at the time, Mrs. Birchall. So they had a big blue, and I was dragged out and ended up going to school in Mudgee. But growing up in Goulburn, I moved away when I was just about to turn 17, I think. So I moved up to northern New South Wales. What I miss so much about it is how it's such an old school town, and you can kind of get away with doing anything there. We just used to cruise around, take the push bikes up the street to go to Pappy's video store, and the dogs would be running with us, and no one really cared, man. Like you sort of knew everyone, and even things like we'd take the horses uptown, and you know, I was like 14 or something, been young, and you'd be riding up to the bar and everything, and then just the freedom, I guess, of being in such a small little community. I miss that so much. And obviously, you know, my old man, he's still down there. He's still got his property down there. So I'm going back in November for the first time in quite a few years. I'm just going to go back there, and we've got a show there. So first time I've played in Goulburn for 6 or 7 years now. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind going to that show, actually.
Do it, man, do it.
Yeah. I've got a good sort of memory of you that actually, like, sticks with me from those days. I reckon we were about 8 or 9, maybe even younger, and you climbed up onto a bin at school and started belting out Hound Dog by Elvis in front of everyone. I remember thinking, like, it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. Do you still pull out a bit of Elvis now and then when you're playing live?
Man, I was playing Burning Love for a little while. I was, like, trying to rev up the band. So I've got this beautiful fan, Margie. I don't know how old she'd be. I don't even want to say how old she'd be. But she's in her later years, I guess, is probably the nicest way of saying it. And she is a diehard Elvis fan. So she goes down every single year. She drives the 8-9 hour trip down to the Parks Elvis Festival. A couple of years ago, she went over to Nashville. She went over to the States and then went and did Graceland and everything with her, looked through Elvis. She always turns up to my gigs by herself. Her partner used to come out with her, but he's now got severe dementia and he's in the home. But so she turns up by herself. She live videos most of my shows. And she just dances the night away and has herself a good time. So I was like, boys, we've got to do something for Margie. So we started playing Burning Love. And, yeah, man, not many people sort of know that side of me, that I was a massive Elvis fan growing up. It's hugely inspirational to who I am now as a performer. And, you know, when I was real young, like you sort of said, I was that pain-in-the-ass kid who used to just get up in front of everyone and anything and start singing Elvis songs. But I'd also dance around and carry on like a pork chop, trying to be like Elvis. And I still do that today. You know, that's been a big part of my life shows. And I think that kind of helped to set us apart a little bit, is the fact that I don't stop, man. I'm like, it's like I'm on springs. So that's definitely shaped me as a musician. But that's funny as hell, man, that you remember me doing that. I don't remember getting up on a bin, but I believe it.
It was something like that, a bin or, yeah. it was pretty cool. Is there a song or an artist that you've been obsessed with lately that you can't stop playing?
Man, I go through so many different phases. Springsteen is a huge inspiration to me. But I also, so at the moment I'm going through an old school country phase. So I just went and listened to pretty well the entire discography of Brooks and Dunn, Dwight Yoakam, Alan Jackson. But I'd say as far as modern artists go, Kit Moore's been one that always just pops back up in my playlists. I'm loving his new album. It's different. It's very hard to pin down one artist. It depends on which way the wind's blowing at the time, I think. It just jumps and changes.
Yep. Are there any songs or artists from your childhood that you believed, like, shaped your taste in music or inspired you to pursue a career in music?
Well, Elvis, definitely.
Yep.
Elvis is always 100%. I don't know how necessarily how that come about. I know I was going through a lot of dad's old records. So mum and dad split up when I was probably 18 months old. And I used to go over and visit dad every second weekend or something. And he had just like old records and like an old LP player. And I started going through it. And I think I discovered like old doo-wop songs. So just that real 1950s style stuff. And maybe dad just started playing that. He had CDs then and he just started playing some stuff. And I just got obsessed with it. And he'd play, you know, the live CDs that he had of, you know, back in like the late 50s, 58, 59, of when Elvis was playing live. And you could just hear the crowd screaming and the energy that was behind it. I think that I liked that. And then when I got to, when my parents started putting me on stage and started giving me the opportunity to start singing, I noticed that when I started doing some of those dance moves and I'd be singing along a little bit here and there, that I get that reception back from the crowd. Similar, obviously on a much, much smaller scale, but, and you know, I'm only 6, 7, 8 years old, but I get that feedback from the crowd and that just set me on fire, man. So definitely Elvis. Other artists, like early childhood artists, the first band I ever seen was a doo-wop band, Australian doo-wop band called the Deltones. And I think, again, possibly because of my love of Elvis Presley and like Buddy Holly and all that type of stuff, I liked the backing bands. And Dad sort of went, oh, there's a band that's touring for a dubbo that's similar to that kind of stuff. So he brought me out and I was, yeah, again, maybe 7 years old, first live show I'd ever properly seen. And I was hooked on it. And ever since then, I've been hooked on big, thick harmonies and the way that they can structure a song. So, yeah. I guess that's probably the biggest things. Other than that, Dad always just played country. So it was always country artists. It was Conway Twitty and Randy Travis, George Jones and Merle and Alan Jackson, all that stuff. So,
yep. And you mentioned Buddy Holly too.
Yeah, man. Yeah, 100%. Love Buddy Holly. Yep. Nice. Yep.
Were you the first in your family to pick up an instrument or did anyone else play music in the family?
My direct family, definitely, I'd say. There's not really anyone around. There is, so I've got a distant cousin also from Gulgong, Richie Gudgeon, who's a prolific artist. You know, he's been gigging and working his ring off since God was a child, you know, and even up here where I am now, people come up and ask me if I'm related to him. We went out and played at Boolia last month, which is, you know, a stone's throw from the desert. It pretty well is the desert. And yeah, someone come up to me there and said, do you know Richie Gudgeon? So I actually haven't seen Richie since I was a kid, but I would like to catch up with him at some point. He's probably the only other musician who's, you know, he's my senior. So, but, you know, my young nephew, he's having a bit of a crack here and there. He's a pretty damn good songwriter. So that's good to see that someone else is jumping on board and doing a bit of music. From a business point of view, I'll slap him and say, no, choose a different career path. You won't make any money. Better.
Yeah, nice. So he's pretty good?
And he's doing well. Yeah. It'd be good to get him up here for a while, but he's just had a baby. He's got a young family of his own now. So he's probably not, his mind's probably in a different spot now, which is totally cool. So I'm sure one day he'll circle back to it. And I hope that he carries on songwriting because he's genuinely very good at that.
So you mentioned earlier, like, that feeling you got when you listened to those live albums. Was there a specific moment when it all clicked and when you thought, like, that music's something that I want to do? Like, were you on stage or?
So I'll tell a story. So the first time I ever played, I ever sung, I just turned 6 years old. It was at the Mindoran Country Music Muster or whatever it was called. And I've just sung first verse of Amazing Grace for some reason, and that was kind of it. And skip forward maybe 6, 8 months later, I was put into the Gulgong of Stedford and my nana had made me up a T-shirt and stuff and I was going to sing Elvis Presley. And my mum had said, after seeing me sort of sing for the first time at Mindoran, she's like, you just stood there. You've got to go up and, you know, walk around the stage a little bit, you know, take a couple of steps here and there and try and, you know, interact with the audience. So I was 6 years old and I took that as you got to go up there and act like Elvis and be a complete idiot. So that's what I did. And I really turned it on. And I've actually got a video which maybe will come out one day, but it's pretty uncomfortable to watch. I went up on stage and I was literally thrusting on stage, 6 years old. And one of the judges was a very old, very Christian lady. And after my thing, she then got up on stage and absolutely berated my parents in front of everyone, that was the whole crowd that was at the Opera House in Gulgong there. She ended up getting sacked pretty well straight after it because she made a complete tit of herself. But looking back now on the videos, I'm like, yeah, it's pretty uncomfortable to watch. I wasn't dancing. I was just humping. in doing that, though, I can hear it even now watching those grainy old videos back. The crowd were right into it. And as soon as they started giving me that back, I went harder and I went worse and I went crazier. I think that was probably the moment that went, yeah, I can do this. This is fun. It's been like that ever since. Moving up here, I sort of went out and started chasing gigs myself and was playing solo gigs, just sit down in pubs, clubs, restaurants, wherever, whoever would hire me, and I'd just sort of sit in the corner and strum some old country stuff. And I did that for quite a few years, and I was making decent money, but it was kind of getting a bit long in the tooth. So I pulled a band together, and once we'd done two or three gigs as a full band, I started getting a bit of confidence, and I kind of brought a little bit that back out. And as soon as I started doing that, started dancing around and really acting up like an idiot, the crowd started giving me that feedback. And again, that sort of just reasserted, went, yeah, no, this is all I'm ever going to do. This is what I was born to do. I've done it since I was six. It's all I know. So it's the only thing I'm genuinely good at. I've had a lot of jobs and I'm a shit employee. So, yeah.
What do you think you'd be doing if you weren't, like, you know, gigging on weekends and all that, like, instead?
Man, I don't know. It could be something along the lines of the police, or when I first moved up here, I put in to join the army. But I was epileptic when I was a teenager, so it never got too much further than going to the recruitment office and doing a handful of push-ups and aptitude tests. So I don't know. You know, I'm completely clear of epilepsy now, but I'm also 30 and I'm very unfit, so I don't think the army would be in my future at all now. But yeah, man, I really don't know. It's a good question. And you know, music, there's not enough money in it for me at the moment to 100% just be living on it. So I own a couple other businesses that, you know, I've got. There's a cleaning company and then there's a booking agency that I've got. So I have to basically try and capitalize on whatever revenue I can kind of get. But I've had a lot of other jobs. I've worked on farms and I've worked in meatworks and I've been a sales rep and I've managed the showgrounds here at Casino. And so I've done a lot of stuff just to try and pop up chasing a dream of being a musician.
Yeah. But nothing beats the music.
No, man, no, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's fun. It's a wild trip. So
yeah.
If not, maybe I'd try and do something. I want to travel, and that's why I love playing music as well, because it kind of comes hand in hand. I love traveling as much as possible. I bought a caravan a couple of years ago, so maybe it'd be just trying to live on the road and just bum around, maybe just be a hippie.
Could you explain for our listeners what you were like as a teenager? Were you focused on your music and goals, or did you go through a bit of a rebellious stage?
Man, I was focused on girls. I think like most teenagers. I was epileptic. I was hormonal. I've always been a little fella. On a tall day, I'm still 5'7", so that hasn't changed. Man, I don't know, teenage... I think because I went to school in Mudgee, I lived in Gulgong on a property in Gulgong. I never really had a massive social life outside of school. So it wasn't all that often that I got to go over to Mudgee to sort of hang out with mates. So I don't know if rebellious was really the word, maybe just a bit of a loner. And I've probably been like that for most of my life. Even now, you know, I like my own company. yeah, I don't know about rebellious. I don't know if that's probably the right term.
Yeah.
I got belted up a few times at school and for being a little bloke. Every now and then I'd swing back and regret it. And yeah, so that was about it. So yeah, man, I don't know how else to sort of describe it other than just being hormonal, lost and stupid like most teenage blokes were. So.
Eventually, like you said earlier, you made the move up to Northern New South Wales. Did you face any major challenges getting started in the music industry?
I think not really. I was fortunate. I just went the old school route of, you know, I've played music all my life and I needed a job. I was pushing trolleys, I think, when I first moved up here. Like, that was my first job. I was 17. I needed to get some kind of income. So I literally just went and got some cards made up, and I've actually got one of the cards still, and just walked around to every pub and restaurant in the local area until the Casino Steak Barn said, yeah, we'll take you on, and they paid me $200 and a steak meal, and they get me on once every sort of 6 weeks, and that was it. So, and I guess through that, I slowly started building up a little bit of a name for myself, and I kind of got a good enough and a decent enough reputation that other musicians were happy to work with me and pulled the band together. And it was just like, you know, then it was start again. Now you've got a band. Now you're not asking $200. Now you're asking, back then it was like $600 or $800, and you've got to basically start the grind. So you start learning how to promote on social media and how to make yourself look better than maybe what you are at the time. How to, you know, use the smoke and mirrors to your benefit. And that's kind of been the exact same strategy that I've used ever since. It's just been, what's the next step? What's the next step? So now I'm not charging $600. Now I'm charging, you know, much, much more than that. But now I'm aiming for bigger festivals and bigger venues. And I don't want to turn up and play to three people in a club where they're screaming at me to turn the volume down. Like, no, we want to put on a show. We want everyone to feel good. We want everyone to experience something now. So it's the same thing now. Just ramp up your social media even more and try and be a pretentious influencer, which I'm terrible at.
I saw you played Tamworth Music Festival as well. Like, what was that?
Yeah, man.
What was that like?
It was good, man. It's hot. It's you know, it's Tamworth's a funny. I love Tamworth. I love it. The best part about Tamworth from an artist's point of view is the networking, because you get to meet so many awesome musicians and other people who are in the same boat as you, who are facing the same challenges and trying to understand the music business. But it was good. You know, Tamworth's got its challenges. The biggest challenge is something that's been well documented, which is the accommodation for artists. Unfortunately, come Tamworth time, a lot of the accommodation, the motels and everything, see how many people flood into town. So their prices skyrocket and artists have to pay that same thing. However, the money you actually get for playing at the venues is really, really low. We don't get much money to play at these venues because everyone's chasing them. So it's one of those things, man. I enjoyed it. When I first got the call up, I just about cried. I was absolutely stoked, and you know, I phoned my bass player to say, "Hey, man, we're going to Tamworth," and he's in his 50s, and he's been slogging away at this game for a long, long time, and he's never done it. So he teared up just about as well. And I thought we were going to get very humbled. We'd been playing a lot, and I thought we were going to go down there and just get blown out of the water. And I was very pleased to see that. I was like, "No, actually, we're doing a good thing here. We're holding our own to some of these other musicians and a lot of these other bands. And, man, there's some proper talent that kicks around there." So I love Tamworth. I'm hoping to come back next year, but we'll see. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
For a while, you toured with your own band around parts of New South Wales. What was it like being on the road as a travelling musician?
It's good, man. It's good. It's good. I do it still. I do it all the time. You've got to have good people around you. You know, it's not family. These are other musicians. These are grown men, and you need to make sure that you can get along with these guys. And I've been very fortunate to have people that I can get along with very well. when you're staying in motel rooms night after night with other blokes who snore and fart and do things that bother you, you've got to be able to have the patience with each other. And I'm sure they've got the exact same opinion of me. You know, it's just the little things that you don't do at home. You're like, why, you know, they live their lives differently to you. So, I love it, man. And I'll do it for as long as I possibly can. I think I love being on the road, and there's things that I could start integrating in. Like I said, I bought a caravan. So, to make it a better experience and a more immersive experience for everybody. I want to always grow on that as much as I can. So, like I said, you know, we're hitting the road again. It's a 8-9 hour trip down to Gulgong in November. So we got a new song coming out in October. It's called Shake His Hand. So I've called this to a Shake Our Hand. I want to get out and meet as many people as I possibly can and put on as best a show as I possibly can for everybody. So Gulgong, Dubbo, got a couple other venues that we're working on at the moment. We just can't, they haven't ticked the box quite yet. So, can't quite just announce it, but they will. It's all happening. It's just, we just need that final confirmation. So, yeah, I love it, man. I really do. Same, you know, all year out of the desert, jumping on aeroplanes, and we missed our first flight, so we had to get diverted up to Townsville. Yeah, man, I'll go anywhere. I love being on the road, and I like driving as well, which helps.
I remember one of the first songs you released as a solo artist was Kiss My Glass. What did it feel like to put out your first single?
Terrifying. I guess, yeah, man. It's a song that I play now. I love that song. It's just a fun song to play. I'm proud of that song. And a lot of people complimented. I had no idea what I was doing. Walking into a studio, I had no idea how to even approach this, how to structure a song in a studio, and it's very different to what you're doing live. Live, it's just you all get together and you play the song. But in the studio, you're layering tracks. So I've never sung to a click track. I've never sung with headphones on. And all those little things I found really challenging. I'm working as much as I can to get better at it and get more comfortable at it now. But, yeah, it was terrifying. And I was very fortunate that Kiss My Glass went fairly well. And I think it sat number three in the Western Australian country music charts for like a few weeks, which is cool. And, yeah, so it gave me just a little bit of pride. And from there, you know, I managed to get signed to Music to Media and its distribution label. And that's just, it's part of the gig now. You know, I try and work on every 8 weeks to try and get a song out. So providing I can afford it.
One of my personal favourites of yours is a song, Back to Country, which you released during 2024. What was the inspiration behind this song?
Yeah, that was, I was working, so I've worked for maybe 3 or 4 years as a sales rep, just going from house to house selling solar and renewable energy sort of plans and whatnot. So I've been doing that for for quite a few years. And my drummer Bootsy had just got a job on a startup macadamia farm, and he was telling me all about it. And he's like, "Man, this is a big Canadian investor. They've invested millions and millions of dollars into this." They didn't actually have a farm there yet. They just had the land. So all it was all earthworks stuff. And he's telling me about everything from the tractors and the machinery and the excavators and graders to all the backpacker girls that were there. He had Southern American girls who just didn't care. They get the tops off, and he's selling it to me. I'm like, man, how do I get that job? And I went on a trip to Cape York. We were only 2 days into the trip, and Bootsy gave me a call, and he said, if you're interested in it, when you get back from the trip, there's a job here for you. Oh, shit. Okay, cool. So I got back from the trip and phoned up the manager of the macadamia farm and had a quick chat with him and sort of told him that I grew up on farms and my background, I operate most machines. And, he gave me the job, and I quit the sales job. Jumped in the cab of a brand new John Deere, a 6110 tractor, and went, holy shit, here I am. I'm back to country. And it just went, there's a song in that, I think. So, my bass player as well, his first cousin's with the legendary Troy Cassidaly, who I was fortunate enough turned up to my gig last weekend in Grafton. And I was listening to a little bit of Troy's stuff. Dale, my bass player, had only just joined the band at that stage. So I was listening to a little bit of Troy's stuff. So there's a lot of Troy in that song, I feel, for me. There's a lot of Troy's songwriting in that song and the way that he phrases it. So, but yeah, that was I think, the first song that I released under Music to Media, which I was pumped at. Did a very bad, very terrible music video at one of my mates' farms and beautiful little property, and I was sort of danced around like some corny 80s star in front of the camera and carrying on. But it was fun, man. And I appreciate what you said. I appreciate it.
Nah, it's one of my favorites. It's a really good song.
Cheers.
What would you say is the craziest thing that you've ever seen on tour or while up on stage?
How PG can we go here, man? What's the rules?
You can go as, full on as you want.
Do you want to hear it? I do have one that's pretty damn full on. Okay. Listeners, be aware. This is going to get pretty wild. So we were playing a gig. I won't say where. It was a pub, but they had a full stage and everything at this pub. And the pub, I know because I spoke to the publican afterwards, so they had about 500 to 600 people there. So we had a big crowd, and it was wild. It was a very, very wild show. There was a girl. She was just to my right, but she was right up against the stage. She was probably in her 30s. She was like very respectably put together. Like she dressed very nicely and everything, but she was getting drunk. And the more drunk she got, more clothing would start coming off her. So I sort of looked down and went, oh, cool, she's got her boobs out. Then a young cowboy come up behind her and he's going, oh, look at, she's pushing back into him. And within a couple of minutes, they were properly getting it on. So she was over the stage and they were getting it on. And I'm nudging the boys going, are you seeing this? This is happening on our stage while we're performing. So anyways, we're all laughing, going, this is hilarious. We finish up and I'm doing a bit of like a meet and greet signage thing afterwards. And this real young fella comes up. He goes, I'm 18 years old. And he's sort of telling me his story. And so he's still going through his HSC. He's still in school. He goes, did you see that woman getting railed up against the stage? Yeah. He goes, that's my English teacher, man. So I've got a story for the boys at school. Holy. So anyways, I don't know if she's still got a job, but she gave everyone something to look at. It was very entertaining.
In 2025, you released a song called Devil I Found, which fuses blues, gospel, and country. What was the inspiration behind this song and the change in style?
I think that goes back to my Elvis roots, really. And that song is so fun to play live. I love playing that song. We do it. It's obviously, if you hear the recording, the original recording, it's got somewhat of a choir, which is just as many friends and people as I could find to sing on it. It's very expensive to get a Southern Gospel choir to actually do some work for you. But, yeah, I don't know. I watched the Elvis movie, and I've always loved that Southern Gospel sound and that super high-energy stuff. I'm not really a religious person, but I've just loved that, the vocals in it and the energy behind it, and I wanted to kind of have my own version of that. But obviously, not being an overly religious person, I was like, I can't be preaching in this song. So I just wrote it about a hot preacher's daughter that she was essentially the devil, and she just wanted to have a shag. So that's basically the gist of the song. Yeah. There's not that much. I wish there was a really cool story behind it, but there's quite a few songs that I have out that I'm like, man, I wish I had like a really cool story. Even Rattle the Walls, which is basically just a seductive song about fucking. I was working at the sale yards at the time. I was sitting on a bobcat feeding these dying looking old Brahmin cows, and I had that groove in my head, and I just kind of wrote the song then and there. I turned the bobcat off, quickly sung what I had into my phone, and that's kind of been the basis of the song. I tell that on stage. I'm like, I wrote this song about fucking while looking at some cows, so take that how you want it. But it's I don't really have a cool story behind it. So that's pretty well it. But as far as Devil I Found goes, I just wanted to emulate that high energy happy clapper kind of stuff. And yeah, we all get to sort of hook in a little bit on the live show. It's a lot more upbeat. The boys are all trying to fill in the parts of the choir, so they're all singing the holy water parts, and I'm jumping around and carrying on, and yeah, doing the full Pentecostal hallelujah.
Yeah, I like that song, how it like brings in the gospel choir, and it's different to the other songs that you've done. Yeah, it's really good. Your latest single titled I'm No Cowboy is a standout track. It really challenges the traditional idea of what being country means. Could you explain for our listeners what inspired this song?
Yeah, man. Yeah. So I guess country music has just gone through this huge boom, which is fantastic. It's now, I'd easily say it's one of the biggest genres in the world now. And there are so many of country festivals that are popping up, and all these artists coming out from the States. You got Luke Combs and Morgan Wallen and all these guys coming out from the States performing in Australia. And there's all these people who may not necessarily have grown up on country. They might not even have grown up in a country town or anything. They might be straight out of the city, and they're going on to Temu, and they're buying themselves a new pair of boots and a plastic hat, and they're wearing it all wacky and all sorts. I've seen knockoff of Cobras being worn backwards. But they're turning up, and people are taking videos of them, and they were posting them all over TikTok. So after CMC last year, and then after Luke Combs toured, there's all these videos popping up on TikTok, basically giving these people shit, going, "Well, you're not country. You don't belong here. This isn't, you know, you're being a plastic cowboy or whatever it is." And I'm like, "Man, we don't need that. That's not good. We should be encouraging these people to turn up." For multiple reasons, you know, we want more people to be enjoying country music, getting behind it. It grows the industry. It helps us as artists. But also the agriculture industry is struggling. You know, we need more people to get into agriculture. And if this is a gateway to get into working in agriculture or something along those lines, fantastic. Hell yeah. We want, you know, there's people singing about what it's like to be off the land or, you know, grow up in small towns. That's good, because these small towns need the love, and the farm, there's people struggling to get farm hands. The opposite side of that is I've had people come up to me because I don't necessarily dress in the most country way, and there is a bit of a boom going at the moment in country where it's very cowboy country at the moment. So Zach Top and you know, a few of those artists are coming out doing that real traditional style 90s country. They got the big mustaches. They're all there in the Stetsons, the Cobras, and all sorts of stuff. It's a big drive on that, and I'm not that person. Like I said, I'm 5'7", so when I put a big hat on, if I put a Cobra on, I look like a rat poking out under a tractor wheel. It's I've had people come up to me because I'm normally just there in ripped up jeans. I've got my cap on backwards half the time when I'm performing, and I've got like just a singlet or something on. And they say, "You're not country. You don't belong in country." I'm also quite rocky. And I go, it's funny because I grew up on, you know where I grew up. You know, we grew up on the land. We had horses. We had dirt bikes. We had Gulgongs as country as it's going to get. There's not that many people there. There's not much going on in Gulgong. So I'm like, man, I've got more credentials than half the people that turn up in country. I'm like, well, screw it. I'm no cowboy. What are you going to do? What are you going to say? I've got the right to do it, but I still get given shit. So everyone gets given shit for enjoying country. So I'm like, screw yous. So that's basically the gist of it. And then, yeah, I put a little video up on TikTok the other day going, isn't that funny that people that used to give me shit in high school for liking country music, and now all the people who are turning up and going, you're not country, you don't belong here. It's just, yeah, it's a funny little turn of events, but I don't mind it at the end of the day. Well, there's always going to be haters. There's always going to be people trying to find negativity in anything in life. But I'm loving how many new people are turning up to country music and enjoying it.
Well, it's pretty – it's like you said, you know, people used to give you shit for liking country music, but now it's getting so popular, like it's seeping into radio, like mainstream, like Luke Combs and all that. Like, so it's cool to be country now, really. Like,
sure it is. Yeah. Yep.
Do you have a favorite out of all of your songs so far that you've released, or one that you're most proud of?
Husband and Wife for me is because it's so emotionally close to me. That's, I guess, that's something that, I perform it, and it didn't see much commercial success, to be honest. It really, even now, because it's what's on Spotify now is actually a re-release, so streaming numbers are just atrocious. They're non-existent. They haven't even busted 1,000. But when I perform it live and I tell the story behind it live, it's been really nice and empowering to have people come up to me after the show and sort of tell me their story. And it's for me that means the most, and that's kind of what I really chase out of music. If I can hit people's feels in some way or another, whether it makes them feel happy and all fired up and go, man, that was amazing, or you know, I can connect with them through lyrics and make them feel like, you know, they're not necessarily alone and that there's other people with a similar story. Even when I re-released that song, I partnered up with the Broken Fathers podcast, which is a veteran-owned and run podcast. And some of the stories that you hear on that is just heartbreaking. You know, there's poor blokes out there, and there's some really good, hardworking people, and you know, even veterans, you know, they fought for our country, and they don't even get to see their kids because of some manipulative, horrible justice system that's happening there. So for me, what's out at the moment, that's definitely it. The next song that I've got coming out now in October, Shake His Hand, that's the one that I'm actually most terrified of, because that's a very, very personal song. This is Husband and Wife is about my family, my brother, my dad, some of my mates now that have, you know, turned 30. But Shake His Hand is that's me. This is me bearing a little piece of my childhood out for the world. But it's not only just me, it's also my mum. So she's a big protagonist in the story behind the song. So I'm genuinely terrified to get this out. But I'm hoping in doing that, I've had some demons from my childhood when my mum's second marriage turned very sour. And I'm hoping that in getting this out that I can connect with some people to say, hey, you're not the only person that maybe as a child went through, seen and experienced domestic abuse. There is a way to confront that. And this is me kind of confronting that and releasing that shit, that built up tension and shit that I had from when I was a child. So it's just by going, no, I'm growing up now. If I met him again, I'd just shake his hand and go, look at you. Look what happened to you. So, yeah.
It sounds like an interesting song, like very relatable to a lot of people. Yeah.
I hope so, man. When I say I hope so, that sounds bad. But I hope that anyone that's gone through a similar experience will find some kind of solace and comfort in this song, knowing that there's plenty of other people out there who have been through the same sort of thing. And, you know, there's people out there who have been through way, way, way worse than I ever was. I still grew up we always had food. So I was still brought up with love. Even in a broken household, for the most part, there was always love there. So,
is that the most rewarding thing when you get people come up to you and say that song like means so much to me, or it's special to me?
Yeah. So we played at the Gympie Muster. It's my first ever muster this year, so a few weeks ago, and I actually played that song, and I sort of told the story behind the song before we started it. There's videos from in the crowd, people with their phones up, people sobbing during the song and going, holy shit, you know, this is heavy. And it is heavy. It's not going to be a song that I can play in a pub, which is the only downside to it. It's very hard to be like, hey, you're fucking going, well, let's go, bouncing around to, oh, here you go, here's a song about domestic abuse. It's slow ballad, but we're going to do our best to try and get it out there and just hope, like I said, like, hope we can connect with some people, and if there's a discussion we can start, then you know, we'll do that. I'm actually fortunate. I'm going to be doing a mental health talk down in Grafton this Thursday, and I'll be performing it down there acoustically, thanks to Cobber there. So, but this is, we're just starting the ball rolling, and I guess we're kind of starting it now.
Nice.
So, yeah.
So for a fun or different type of question, that I usually like to ask guests. Is there an artist, both dead and alive, that you would love to meet or collaborate with?
I mean, we're going to go back to Elvis again, aren't we? It's, yeah. I mean, as far as if I could time travel, I'd love to go back and watch an Elvis concert because that he started it, right? He was the original. What he did on stage, the way he performed, the way he got it out there, was the platform, the basis for everyone else. It's everything has grown out of that. So I would love to go back and just to watch that, just to experience that. But as far as an artist that I'd like to collaborate with, dead or alive, Brothers Osborne would be a whole bunch of fun, I think. Just to do something with it, those guys. I think I've got that high, like a bit of a sort of a medium tenor voice, and you know, it's TJ, the lead singer. He's got a real deep baritone voice, and then there's John, who's just a hell of a guitarist. I'm like, we could do something real cool. We could rock the hell out of something. So yeah, man, maybe Brothers Osborne.
Nice. So could you tell our listeners what's next for Billy Gudgeon and what we can expect from you in the near future? Do you have any gigs you'd like to promote or upcoming singles?
Yeah, man. Well, this Shake a Hand, that'll be out. Yep. Excuse me, I just grabbed my calendar. 24th of October. On the 24th of October, Shake a Hand, the brand new single will be coming out. And then straight after that, going into November, we're going to be touring that song. So like I said, we've got confirmed that we're going to Goulburn and Dubbo. I'm going to be doing a local show here in Casino on the 22nd of November, which will be part of that tour, the Charcoal Hotel. But, yeah, we've got the Coffs Coast Country Music Festival on the 25th of October, which I'm super excited to be a part of. There's Will Day, Viper Creek Band. There's Chris Stapleton tribute show. It's going to be on that one. So, yeah, man, that's and then into December where we've just got the normal stuff and, yeah, start looking at the next year, I guess. And I've already got some cool festivals and whatnot. That's all lined up. I can't say anything about them just yet until the festival announcers start telling me that we can start promoting shit. But the other thing, I guess, is I have put in, and I've got no idea, so it may not go anywhere, but I've put in to do the Star Maker in Tamworth this year. So we'll see if that happens. I haven't heard anything back. It may not, but we'll see. I can't. My hands are kind of tied with January until I know what's happening with Star Maker, whether I've got through or if not, then we'll just sort of have to start scrambling to get some work. So yeah, that's basically it, and that's how I like to live my life: knee jerk and panic.
Before we go, could you please tell our listeners where's the best place to find your music and follow your journey?
Yeah, of course, man. We've got all social media platforms, BillyGudge_music on Instagram, BillyGudgeonMusic on TikTok, and BillyGudgeonMusic on Facebook. So, yeah, and they're all pretty active. We've also got a website, BillyGudgeon.com, which I try and keep up to date as much as possible. I always post gig guides and whatever's new is on there. That's got a connection directly to the merch store, so you can grab some caps that look sexy as hell and T-shirts and whatever you want. And if you want, I'll sign them and I'll send it to your grandma or whatever you want. So, yeah, man, that's basically the gist of it. That's the best place to get in contact with me. It's all through the website, and we'll just check out what's going on in the world of me.
Nice. Those hats look pretty cool too, with the bull horns and all that. Like,
yeah, cheers, bro.
So yeah, get yourself one of them if you can. Billy, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, mate. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your story and your music with us all today. I wish you all the best for the future ahead, and hopefully I can get to one of your gigs soon enough.
Brother, I very much appreciate you having me, man. When we get this podcast out, I'll share it through, but I'm going to post that photo of you and me in kindergarten.
Yeah.
You look like you got no idea what's going on, and I've just been a little rat bag. So it's funny, that just popped up. It fell out of my cupboard or something only a couple of years ago. So, I'll chuck that up. It's funny as hell.
Nice.
Good to see you, man.
And that wraps up this special episode of Lyrics of Their Life podcast. A huge thank you to my old mate Billy Gudgeon for joining me and taking the time to share your story and your music. As you can see, he's a top bloke and his music is well worth checking out. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check out all of Billy Gudgeon's music, which is available to listen to on all major streaming platforms, including Spotify. I'll leave some links to his music in the episode's description to make it easier to find, or just search for Billy Gudgeon on Spotify. You can also find him over on YouTube and all social media platforms like Instagram and TikTok, which I'll post links to in the show notes. If this is your first time tuning into our show, don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button so you don't miss future episodes. And if you're enjoying the show, a quick rating or review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts goes a long way in helping the podcast to grow. If you would like to follow the podcast, you can find us over on Instagram, Facebook, X, and TikTok at Lyrics of Their Life Podcast, or our website at lyricsoftheirlife.com for updates and more. If you'd like to support the podcast and help keep episodes like this coming, you can head over to my Patreon at patreon.com/lyricsoftheirlifepodcast, or you can buy me a coffee over at buymeacoffee.com/lyricsoflifepod. Every bit of support means the world to me and helps make episodes like this one possible. Whether you're a long-time listener or just discovering the show for the first time, I thank you for being here and supporting the show in whatever form that comes in. Thanks again for listening. I'm your host, Adam Hampton, and this is Lyrics of Their Life.